Greetings. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Essential Leadership Skills. Today, we have the privilege of hosting a remarkable guest, Kathy Kuleshe, a dynamic influencer in apology-free leadership. In an era where effective leadership is increasingly challenging, with demands skyrocketing from all quarters, members, clients, employees, and even superiors, we often find ourselves on shaky ground. We're resilient and still standing, yet sometimes it doesn't feel like quite enough. Her fresh perspective on leadership is a game changer, and she's been sharing it, delivering a record-breaking 100 presentations per year for the past 3 years. We'll delve into Kathy's unique approach to leadership, explore her insights, and learn from her vast experience. So buckle up for an enriching journey as we navigate the waters of leadership with Kathy Kuleshe. And remember, true leadership is apology-free.
Good morning, everybody. Kathy, I want to take a lot of time to say thank you for getting with us. We've had the challenges of this morning so far. And this morning, no matter what time of day you listen to it, I always say morning gives you a lot of energy, and I appreciate it. But speaking of energy, in the introduction, talked about the fact that you're doing 100 talks a year. How do you do that? How do you energetically get yourself healthy enough to do that and have the energy to perform that way?
Now, you're assuming that I'm healthy enough to do it. Just kidding. It's all about creating routines. It's all about listening to your own body, paying attention to your environment, and taking care of yourself. Because when you're presenting 100 times a year, you're responsible to show up and be able to provide, you know, information that's actionable to keep people engaged, to get people excited about the topic. And so it's all about the preparation. So I make sure I get up early enough to have time for myself. I make sure I have time for things to go wrong. I plan in advance for pretty much any circumstance that I can control. And then I do simple things like I drink water before I drink coffee. Right? Make sure I eat and keep my energy going throughout the day. If I'm traveling, it's a little bit different than in person than it is virtually. Virtually, I'm a little bit more in control of my environment, except for things like internet working and things like that. Yeah. But I have different approaches, whether I'm in person or virtual, when I am presenting, to make sure that I can show up and be the best version of myself.
And this kind of goes the same type of topic. Virtually and in front of people, there's two different sets of energy levels. Do you adjust for that at all?
I absolutely do. And I want to let you know that you're not on camera right now. So it's just me here. He's here, everyone. Glenn's back there. He's in a busy place. He's there. Yeah.
I can fix that.
So I would say traveling, obviously, is, and we were talking about this the other day, is traveling is harder, right? And now I think traveling even seems harder than it did pre-pandemic because we got out of practice a little bit when we got off the road. And it was so nice to not travel. And now we're more selective, I think, when we make choices to go on the road. So with the travel, there's the planning is even more important because there's things that can go wrong. Just getting into your car and getting to the airport or the Uber picking you up on time at your house. So it's building in that extra 15, 20, 30 minutes just for the getting from your house to the airport going wrong, but also having routines when it comes to. So a simple thing, and men are probably a little bit different than women on this. Men are more comfortable wearing the same suit a couple days in a row, switching out your tie. Women, we're a little bit more focused on our outfits, and sometimes we don't want to wear the same outfit twice. But I had to get used to the fact that, you know what, for me to have more energy, to save myself for the actual time in front of the audience is to build in routines that when I show up, I've got as much energy as possible. So that's thinking of my outfits as uniform, right? Okay. Making sure I have backups for everything you need. And backups can be a backup plan for parking at the airport, can be a backup flight to get to where you're going. It can be a backup HDMI cable, right? So it's thinking about what's your plan B. And then I think simple things like when you arrive the night before, try to get there early enough that you have time for yourself. And then minimize the alcohol you drink, right? Remember, you're there to serve people. You're not there to serve yourself. And that's a leadership lesson, right? To be a servant leader, not be self-serving. So it's how do you take care of yourself so you can show up the best? Virtually, it's different. virtually. It's about maybe showing up online 30 minutes early. You've probably had this happen in when your internet's not working. And I know I've had that happen because we just did an event when my internet wasn't working and you were the backup. You were plan B. So it's always having a plan B, whether it's virtual or on the road. And at home, it's I have to remind myself to leave my cute little pink room here and go take breaks away from the computer. I'll go outside and take a walk. I make sure I stay hydrated. So it's just having routines that make sure you stay healthy, stress-free, and that you've got plan Bs. So if something does go wrong, you've got an easy solution to those
things. That reduces stress. That reduces a lot of stress. What I've noticed, though, and I think you talk about this very well, that when we look at the fact that what it takes to be a speaker on the road like you are, embracing that ability to be a speaker is almost like embracing leadership. And you talk about that idea of embracing your leadership skills, embracing your leadership ability. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I feel like our business, speaking, training, and leadership, if you're going to do it, it has to be something that you have a passion to do. So that's really where the embracing comes from, is if you have a passion for it, it's going to show up. And when you show up, people will see it. If they can't believe that you love leading, they can't believe you love speaking, they can't believe you love training, then you haven't embraced that gift that you have. And it's going to be really hard to build the trust from the audience or the trust from your team to follow you. Because as speakers, trainers, and even as leaders, we're asking people to follow us and we're trying to influence people to follow us. And if we believe in what we do, we've embraced it fully, we're all in 100%+, we will have followers. But if we're not really committed to it and it's not something we have a passion for, somebody sitting in an audience is not going to believe that our stories or our methodologies, and an employee that works for us is going to struggle and resist following us if they don't believe that we really have a passion and a belief in what we're doing.
But follow up with that. I'm wondering if when you to embrace leadership, it seems like, especially back in the 60s and 70s, it was counterintuitive to allow yourself to be a sounding board or to use your team as a sounding board. You bring that up too. Can you share a bit more about how that helps you embrace leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I learned how to be a sounding board from a gentleman named Nick who worked for me. And it was the first time I really realized I had been doing it over the years, but I really realized how important it is. And so back in my first job, I'm going to age myself here, was August 18th, 1978. I was a bus girl at the old Aladdin Hotel here in Las Vegas. And leaders were more of, they gave directions. They didn't really care to talk to their employees. They were the boss. And I'm a baby boomer. And so we took the role that the boss is the boss and you do what the boss says because the boss is the boss. The 21st century leaders, they have more empathy. They have a lot better listening skills. They are collaborators. And one of the most important things that we can do as a leader is really just shut up and listen. Listen to what our people have to say. And don't listen to solve problems. Don't listen to fix the situation or the person. Just listen to be there and hear and witness what your employee is going through. And then you may find out that all they needed was just you to listen. They may not, and a lot of times they don't need you to fix something. They just need to be able to say the words out loud, process what they're going through, and find their own best solution. They just need somebody that's willing to give them that space to be able to talk it out. And I've had Nick a number of times would come into my office. And when I learned to just listen to him, he could work through his own problems and find his own solutions without me giving him any advice or any recommendations. But I had to learn to do that. I had to learn to stop trying to fix and solve problems and just let him sit there and process.
Okay. So when the idea of letting the person put it out there and then you come back with it, but I think an important thing I want to just make sure everybody heard is that you don't necessarily have to come back with a solution. And that must really be tough because after all, we are, and you talk about that idea of being a human as a leader, but as a human, I don't know if it gets divided by sex or something, but by gender, but we want to say what's going on. We want to put our two cents in.
Yeah.
How do you coach against that?
The recommendation I always make is that we should listen 80% of the time and talk 20. Now, any good manager, any good supervisor, any good leader has spent some of their life experience and career fixing problems, solving problems. And what happens is there's a certain point in your career where you stop being the fixer and the solver, and you give people space to do that themselves. And it is one of the hardest things to do, to stop fixing problems, stop solving problems. I know I struggled with it. I was a general manager of hotels for a number of years. And the nature of being in the hospitality industry is solving problems all day long. So it's just about creating a new habit. And that habit is a habit of listening and getting out of your head and processing what you're going to say next, how you're going to fix it, and just be present with the person. And it's something that people, it requires a lot of practice. So it's just giving them the recommendations and the tactics and the techniques and the this suggestion of 80-20, and then sending people off to practice. It takes a lot of practice to let go of control of solving all the problems.
I twist a little bit in the wind here, because you're from the tourism industry, and I said there's one problem after the next problem that you almost feel like you need to set up and solve. But is that 80-20 rule going to apply there too, if not just for your employees, but for your customers who come in? Because you're creating the culture there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When I was real young in the industry, I worked for Embassy Suites Hotels, and I was there when they rolled out the 100% satisfaction guarantee policy. And there was a sign on the TV in the living room of every suite. And it said, if you're not happy, we offer 100% satisfaction guarantee, full refund. And we rolled out this program where if a guest was not happy, any employee in the hotel could refund their entire night stay. And what's really interesting about this is what I think, that's where I started to learn a really good question is, what make it right? What can I do to make it right for you? And so you put the question back on the customer and let the customer decide what is fair. You let the customer inform you of what needs to be done. And I'll tell you, a number of times all customers want is they want the problem solved and they want to be listened to. I can't tell you, as I grew in my career, how many times customers would call me and tell me I was the first person that really listened to them. And I worked with Wyndham Hotels. I ran the customer service department. It was my department under my responsibility. And I had 30 employees in that department sitting in an office over at the airport in Dallas taking complaint calls. And when somebody called the corporate office, they always wanted to talk to the chairman, Fred Kleisner. And his office would have them talk to me, or the switchboard operators would give it to me. And I would answer the phone. Thank you for calling Wyndham Hotels. This is Kathy. How may I help you? They go, what is your name? Kathy Kalesha. How do you spell that? Yeah. I'd spell it out. What's your title? And I'm like, oh, here we go. And then they would go, they just rant in the phone. I just cursing every word in the book. And I would just, no. And I would wait until there was a pause. And I would wait just long enough that I was determining if they were taking a breath or if they were ready for me to say something. And sometimes they would be like, are you there? I'm like, oh no, I'm here. I was just making sure that you said everything you need to say. And then I would just ask them, what can we do to make it right? What do you feel is fair? And they would say, oftentimes they would say, you know what? You're the first person that's listened to me. I've talked to 5 people. Nobody listened to me. And the solution with both employees, customers, your leaders, your peers, is if you can be a better listener, you can be the person that's the go-to person that they trust more than anybody else, because that's all people want. They want to be heard. They want to be seen. They want to be visible. And if you can give that gift to people, they will be loyal to you as a customer or as an employee or even as a leader.
Now that is so key, I think. And it's a good lesson to remind everybody. And it's a good way to coach people. Just listen for a change. A good way to coach people. I wonder, staying in the tourism industry just a little bit, though, technology has changed tremendously. Mm-hmm. If I have a complaint, I got to go through the bot first. Okay. How are you coaching? How are you thinking about that idea? How much technology has changed? My last trip I took, did it all through the AI and didn't talk to anybody the whole time.
Yeah.
And even when things went wrong, couldn't talk to anybody. So how do we balance that out? Part of your thing is to be human.
Yeah.
But how do we balance this out?
Well, I think if you're a business leader, a business owner, a general manager, you run a store, you're in charge, you have to give your customers the option to speak to a human being. Because even though you're ready to embrace AI to help you with your business and help you with customer service, and it certainly can make life much easier, the customer has to know how to get in touch with a human being. You have to give them that option because we're there. We have to stay in front of technology. We have to leverage it to make our businesses better. But a lot of the customers that we deal with don't even know really that what AI is about and that it exists. And I know I was talking to my sister about AI, and she's in HR at a big casino hotel here in Las Vegas. And she was getting ready to write something and she was super busy. I'm like, oh, have you thought about using AI for that? And she's like, what? So that most people, they've heard about AI, but they don't really know how involved it is and how much it's involved in phone calls and even chat messages. Like, they don't really know how much it's involved in everything we do. So you've got to let the customers catch up. And the way to do that is to give them a way to get in touch with you. So it's a phone number on the website that they can get to somebody easily. It's a way to email somebody where they can get somebody to somebody easily. Now, I get that the biggest problem that all leaders are telling me that they still have right now, mm-hmm. and probably more so than ever, is recruiting and having enough team members and retention. So it's a two-pronged approach, right? It's providing the service that customers expect and also being able to be a servant leader that you attract and retain the best talent. And that is not easy. And it's all about who you are as a leader.
That's what we want to be able to say, okay, it's not our fault. We can't get enough work. There's too much. It's too easy for people to quit and move on. How do we balance that though? Because it is, if I can't attract the right talent to cover my small company, it's my fault. I think it's my fault.
And not your fault, your responsibility.
Okay. Much better word for it. Yeah. Much better word, much better coaching. It's my responsibility to make sure that takes place. How would you coach me other than being listening? Is there any other steps you would coach me to say, okay, take care of your responsibilities here, and here's how you can balance this ideal of people and chat AI, because you got, or whatever it's called, open AI.
Yeah. ChatGPT. I would ask you, so what is your current process for finding and recruiting people for your team?
Oh, currently, talk.
Talk. Okay. And when you're having those conversations, when you're having those conversations with people, when you're doing that recruiting, what are you looking to find out about that person to determine if they're a good potential member of your team?
See how well they think on their feet.
Okay.
Okay, to see how well they figure things out and actually can role play.
All right. And so are you doing behavioral interviewing?
If you call behavioral interviewing just the idea of, here's a role play question for you.
Okay.
We're going to role play this together, but I'm not doing all the DISC assessment and all those type of things. No.
All right. So one suggestion I would have for you, in addition to the role playing, is ask them questions about what they've done previously in other jobs. So tell me about a time. So let me ask you this. What's a key quality or a key requirement you have for somebody to be on your team? What's a key responsibility that they would have on your team?
To know that no matter where they're at, if they're like working in the marketing department, that they're making things right. They're doing it the right way. They're helping people get better by doing things the right way.
Okay. So what I would say is I would ask some questions around, tell me about a time when you knew the processes or the procedures were not right. They were not aligned with the mission and vision of the organization for a past job you had. What did you do and what was the result? And when they say, generally you go, I want to know about a specific time where you knew there was a problem with the procedures or the policies or the materials. What exactly was the problem and what did you do? Take all the time you need to think back about that. And then what they do is they go back in time. And now when they go into that story and they think about that experience, now they're sharing really who they are, because past performance is the best predictor of future performance. Anyone that's taken some online courses or gotten some coaching can show up and do a really good job in an interview and tell you what you want to hear. You have to be able to determine who have they been in their past positions and determine if they, who they were, because that's who they're going to be in the future, and get through some of that. We're all good at answering questions the way people want to hear it.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Past performance predicts future performance. And then the other thing I would say is be really clear on what the mission and vision of your organization is, and ask some questions about that mission and vision, or about how they've performed in a similar mission and vision. Because if they're not aligned with your mission and vision, you can bring them in, but it's going to be a failure. So you want to find somebody that's in alignment. And if you've got a team of people already working for you, you can include them in some of those advanced, those interviews you're doing initially. Who are they going to have to work with? Are they going to be a good fit for the team? Mm-hmm. So that there, you don't have that struggle. Because the key thing here is that when you're hiring people, you want to attract people to you that are the best possible fit, that are going to enjoy and have a passion for what they're doing in your organization. They're going to enjoy the bulk of the work they do, because that's going to keep them showing up and doing good work. If they're just looking for a job, they're going to be just looking for a job 3 weeks from now or 6 months from now. And also the other part of that recruiting is when your people sit down and interview that person, you want them to be able to say with confidence and with conviction that they absolutely love their job. So you already have to be a leader that people love and respect, because they will help you recruit better people.
Yeah. And that's what I've discovered. It really is a big help recruiting. When you look at the tourism business with all the innovation and technology, can you give us an example of maybe a business out there right now that you feel like is doing a good job balancing those out with good people and good?
Let's see. I don't know if I have a, this is a hard question. Let me think about this. Yeah. Let me think. I'm trying to think about what I've done recently traveling wise, where I was like, wow, that was really good. Yeah.
Put it that way. I'm trying to think. I don't think I can say that.
So here's the thing. So traveling, getting to the airport, right? I have TSA pre-check.
Yeah.
And if you get on an airplane at least once a month, you should have TSA pre-check, right? Yep. So one thing they're doing now in the airports, which they started doing pre-pandemic, and now I know more airports are doing this now, is the scanning of the driver's license versus your ticket, when you go through TSA pre-check.
Yeah.
Yep. So if that is something that I feel like technology has advanced, where in that, I think probably the real ID probably helps with this. I'm not sure. When you go up there and show them your driver's license, it's much simpler process to get through and get to your gate. So it's an example. That's of how back, yeah. Back in the day, you had to have your ticket. You're pulling it out of your bag, or even you had to have your phone and you had to have your QR code for your ticket on there. Now, you should have your driver's license when you travel. So the airports that are, and I know the Las Vegas airport has had that driver's license scanner, and more now are implementing it. And that's a simple thing that makes, nobody likes going through TSA. I actually don't mind it, because I have pre-check, they scan it. You get in that little line, it's not as long as the other line, and you get into the gate faster. So it's a simple way that embracing technology has made traveling better. Advanced check-in at hotels. That is something that's been around for several years, right. And it makes the traveling a little less stressful. And the hotels that show you the map and you can pick your room, I prefer over the ones that just automatically check you in. But that advanced check-in where there's a map online on their app, and you have to be on the hotel's app. But I love the fact that they give you an option at some hotels to pick the room and the location, because you can look at that app and go, oh, where's the elevator? I don't want to be near the elevator. I hate the elevator. Yeah. So those are little things that can make traveling much easier, much smoother. And it also helps the hotel employees, because it's one less step. I was in Dallas a year ago. I think it was a Marriott up in Plano. And even though they were short staffed and you could feel it, they were still all very kind, welcoming and professional, even though you could see that they were being pushed because they had some big meetings in the hotel, but they still made the point to connect with you as a human, even though the staff was clearly stressed because of understaffing. And I talked a little bit to the front desk manager, and he said, I said, you guys are doing a really good job of providing good service. Everybody's friendly. Are you short staffed? And he said, oh yeah, we're really short staffed. I said, you know what? I knew you probably were, but you're doing a great job of not letting us feel that and see that. And it's, and he said, they do a lot of cross training. They do a lot of recognition of their team. They listen to their people and they make sure they all know how to support one another and back each other up. So it's simple things. It's about the culture, right? It's about the listening right. And the
culture. Now, I noticed that also in Dallas, you said at the, the convention center there, the city market.
Oh.
Marketplace. Where,
yeah. I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. Yeah.
It was really a nice setup, a nice feel. Mm-hmm. It's just that you walked in and the lady who checked me in said, you'd never spoken here before. Let me take you to the green room. Mm-hmm. And so she told her buddy, okay, fine. What's supposed to do? So something that you said though brings us back full circle to me. If they're going to use the technology, that means they still need to be very much involved with the human touch. And that seems to be, comes from the manager or the head of that department.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like the person in Dallas you're talking about was very much aware of how much struggle they all had at human touch. So that comes back to what you were saying earlier about human touch. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And Simon Sinek has a video out there where he talks about the difference between management and leadership. Yeah. And he says that oftentimes he asks CEOs what their responsibilities are. And they're like, I'm responsible for providing customer service. And he's no, CEOs, you're not responsible for taking care of the customer. You're responsible for the person taking care of the person who takes care of the customer.
Yes.
So the person at the top, if they take care of the team, then the team takes care of the customer. That's who you're responsible for. But if you don't take care of that team, then they're going to give as much as you give, unless they have a lot of pride and a lot of motivation and they just let things roll off them. But a lot of times that it's a ripple effect, right? That what you give is what they give. And so if you take good care of your people and they know you're doing everything that you can for them within the resources that you have, they'll see that, they'll feel it, and they'll do the same for their customers or for your customers.
Take care of
the people who take care of the customer. Yeah.
Take care of your direct reports.
Yeah.
And they take care of their direct reports and therefore they take care of the customer.
Yeah.
Tell me, what are you doing right now to help people, to help your, I'm trying to think of a better word for, but help your potential customers, to help your customers. What are you doing right now to help them?
So I think one thing that people always tell me that I do for them, which is not, it's not like I set out and go, oh, I'm going to do this for you. But I think the one result I see when I work with my customers is I give them hope. So they'll say, thank you for reinstilling my hope. Because what happens is when you're in the day-to-day and you don't allow yourself to step out, you start to feel really beat up and beat down. And you feel like this is the way it's always going to be. And there's no way out to the other side. When you actually invest in your team, you invest in training, you invest in that inspiration and motivation, and you give them an hour away or a day, half a day away or a day away, and you give them some time to step out of their day to day and to be able to have some perspective and hang out with each other or with other people that are in that similar situation, they get to get some perspective that their situation is not always going to be the way it's going to be, and that they do have some control where they can make a change. And that gives them hope that this is a moment in time. And this one moment does not define who they're always going to be in the situation they're always going to be in. And they can make changes and go back and implement few strategies to make little incremental changes that over time will make things better.
From what I know about you, that really rings true. It's just that idea of bringing that hope, which leads in some cases to someone feeling like they have ownership over their own life.
Yes.
Their own thing. So that really happens. When you are actually out speaking, and you do this, like you said, you do this 100 times a year, you're sharing your message, you're out there. Do you have an overriding principle, or is it just, okay, I'm going to give you as much hope as I can. Do you have another one that you use?
The thing I like to talk about generally, which the topics I cover, like in my keynote, serves that it comes from this idea, is to ditch the to-do list and master the to-be list. So the to-be list is people-oriented. the to-do list is task-oriented. So there's nothing wrong with being an amazing manager and an amazing supervisor. Supervisors and managers are often very task-oriented. But the day you start deciding that you are going to be a leader also is the day you have some harmony between your tasks and the people. And the people is your to-be list. So it's, and I had, I probably shared this with you at some point. I had, when I was like 27 years old, my first real mentor was a guy by the name of Ralph. He was my general manager. And I was the assistant general manager in Secaucus, New Jersey at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Secaucus. And he was new to me. And he asked me what my career goals were. And I said, I want to be a general manager someday. And he said, if you want to be a general manager, then walk in here every day as if you are the general manager. Be the general manager. And that was some of the best advice that I've ever gotten because it changed my mindset. It's not waiting for somebody else to do it for you or waiting for the stars to align or being on that lazy river of your career where you just wait for the things to happen. I walked in every day and it totally changed my perspective. I walked in thinking, okay, if I'm the general manager, who am I talking to? What am I doing first? Who am I being? And it changed the way I treated my employees and my customers. And I got more focused on the people and less focused on the task. And that's the to-be list, is who do you want to be? And then live into that. And what happens is you gain more followers and you gain a team that supports you. And the to-dos oftentimes take care of themselves.
I have to wonder, because I always preach, be first. Like I said, the do's will come later. When you're giving your keynotes, you don't get much pushback on that, though, do you? About, hey, be, then your do will balance out. Do you get a lot of pushback about that?
I think the fear is then what happens to the tasks. And I'm one a reformed control freak. So you do worry about the things getting done, the activities getting done. So it's not necessarily about totally letting go of the tasks and the to-dos, but it's, you've got to have balance. It's when we give feedback to employees, oftentimes we're always giving feedback that's a criticism, right?
Yeah.
And we're trying to fix things, but we forget to give praise. So Dale Carnegie teaches us to have equal measures of criticism and praise, because if you only tell people what not to do, they don't know what to do. So when you give them praise, you tell them, here's what you want, what you do more of. So it's all about finding harmony between who you want to be and the work that has to get done. And you find a balance. So it's not give up all those day-to-day tasks, but that's probably the biggest fear. And then there's a personality style of people that are more introverted and more indirect that do struggle. You and I, obviously, you're a little bit introverted, I think.
Yeah.
But maybe reformed introvert. But when you are, when you haven't practiced stepping out of your introverted style, and I'm an ambivert, or you're not comfortable in those human conversations, you have to start, if you're very task-oriented, that's probably the other person that struggles is, wait a minute, you want me to ask somebody about their dog and their kids? And here's the thing is that it's not, you don't have to do it. But if you want to be a more influential leader, it's a good skill to learn. It's a good strategy to employ is good. Accepting the fact that you've got people that are humans working for you and they want to be working for a human that cares about them and sees them as a person, not just as a task. And so that's probably where some of the pushback comes from too, is I'm not a people person. Okay.
Afraid you are, but okay.
Yeah, you don't have to be a people person. I just want you to want to know your people so that your people want to work for you. That's all it is.
That's a good way to put it. I want to ask you, I want to be very respectful of your time. I know we probably have gone over time and getting close.
Don't worry.
I want to ask you something. What did I not ask you that I should have asked you? What is something I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
This is good. So I would say there's so many things I love talking about, which is really hard. I'll tell you. So one question I get asked, this is something that I learned that maybe it wouldn't be a question that you'd ask, but it's something I learned about the listening. So I want to go back to that.
Okay.
Is I practice my listening skills with people in my family, people I know, organizations I'm in. And I can tell you that what I did learn is that you can listen too much. So the 80-20 rule is important, because if you do 100% listening, you can actually do damage, because then the person doesn't really think you're interested and care. And so I did this, I was practicing my listening skills with my mother pre-pandemic. We got together to look at the website for Toastmasters, because I'm a Toastmaster. We were in Toastmasters together, and she was needed to know how to use the Toastmaster website. So she came over one day, we're sitting in my eating kitchen, and I show her how to use the website. And then we were just chatting. And I think I'm going to talk freely about my mother, because the chance of her watching this podcast is slim. But she likes to talk about what's going on and do some venting. And yeah. I have a natural fixer personality. But I was trying to get myself out of that, trying to fix everything. So I was just trying to listen, because I found with my mom, she doesn't want it fixed. She just wants you to hear her out. She wants to vent. So I did a really good job of listening to my mom. Such a good job that she finally said to me, "You know what? I'm just going to go." And I was like, "What do you mean you're going to go? What's wrong?" And she goes, "I'm the only one doing the talking here. You're not contributing anything."
Oh, no.
And so what I learned is that there is a too much listening, which most people won't get that far in their, I challenge you to over-listen. Because if you can get there, you can find where the mark is. But there's that point where they think you're just not, you just checked out because you're not contributing. So there is a little bit, and if you're introverted, this is harder for you, but there's a little bit of give and take that you have to give. And that's that 20% where you're actually asking questions and engaging with the person. Because if you're not, then they actually think you're just checking boxes off a list, or you're just shining them on and you're not really interested or care. So that was an interesting lesson that I learned, that with my mom, I just try to listen so much that she will stop. Just kidding. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. I listened to my mother out the door, which is funny. You don't want to listen so much that people like don't think you care and they won't come back to be heard. Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting lesson that you wouldn't even know to ask that. But yeah.
You wouldn't. The way we're set up, I would never ask you, can we listen too much?
Yeah.
Of course, but that's basically, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Especially if we don't give if we just listen. No, and to the extent, I want to ask you one final thing.
Okay.
I know you do a lot of keynotes. What else are you doing? Do you do, if someone is to take your information, we'll put your website up there. They can reach out to you to do keynotes. Do you do training?
Yes, I do keynotes. I do training. I have a leadership program that companies will bring me in for that can run 6 months, 9 months, or a year. And I do coach a little bit of coaching. The coaching comes with training. So if you have me doing training for your team, I can do coaching with some of those team members. And I have a couple just coaching clients, but most of the coaching is related to a training topic. Because what it does is you go in and you learn the concepts, and then you leave and your brain starts to release it all. And then we do coaching so that you can start implementing some of the techniques and strategies, and then be able to have somebody to talk to about how it's going. Because I don't want people to go and try something just once and then it doesn't go as well as they'd like it to. I want them to keep trying. And sometimes it helps to have a little coaching so that you can walk through and get really good at the strategies and techniques. Because they do take practice. It takes intention. And sometimes you need help. It's rough out there. Just like you just got a free coaching session with me today.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And hopefully thousands of other people will as well. So that's how we're supposed to do it. I want to ask you just real quick, the 6 to 9 month training that you came through was just a real quick high level overview. I don't know. I said that was my last question.
Five. I know. You're like, wait, one more question. So it's
a quick overview of that.
Yeah. So we cover the key topics, and it's like, if you go with a shorter program, you get to pick the topics you want to cover, but I would go in and I would do a startup session with the team and talk about what the future looks like. And they will learn key strategies and techniques and some soft skills to become better, more influential leaders, more confident, better communicators, and leaders that attract and retain the team. So we cover some of the same topics that you and I always talk about, like communication skills, dealing with conflict, listening skills. We cover all those kind of skills that it requires a little bit of time and practice to learn. And we go on this journey together so that we bring everybody along. So I can do, usually it's a combination of in-person and some virtual. Okay. And each month we cover a different topic. And then by the end of that 6, 9, or 12 month period, they've attended all these sessions. They've gotten some practice. If they take on the coaching, they also have had some coaching, and we get to celebrate the team rising together and learning together and creating a culture where everybody's on the same page. Cause that's the important part of doing that training at an organization is everyone's learning together. And so their vocabulary and the culture and how they talk about leadership is all consistent, and they all understand each other better too. So yeah.
That makes great sense.
I give them hope, and I give them hope.
Give them hope. Great sense. We have three other subjects that we're going to have to do again another time, another day, because time. But I thank you so much for taking the time and hanging in there through my technical wonderments.
No worries.
But I'm glad we got it in.
Yeah.
And just fantastic talking to you. I appreciate you a whole lot and helped me a lot. So you did give me a lot of coaching personally. So great coaching.
All right. Thank you for having me. We recently reconnected and it was like, oh my gosh. So I appreciate you including me. I know this, you're striving to provide your listeners with really good quality programming. And I really appreciate what you're doing to just help people along their journeys. And there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And I think what you're doing to help them get through the uncertainty is really important to your listeners. And I know they really appreciate you. And I do appreciate you having me on. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for connecting with us here at Touchstone Publishers. Please join our group, Essential Leadership Skills, and share your leadership knowledge with us all.